so you've probably been waiting a while for this. I haven't really done anything for a bit. I've really wanted to, and I'm still not sure today is going to be what you're expecting, but we're going to give you something. We're trying to get all the tools to work, and I got my friend and guest here, Pastor Brian Wolfmuller, to do this episode of Raw with me, but we're going to do a really funny thing. We're doing it on two levels. We're doing it on my podcast, and we're doing it on his world-famous YouTube station, which he tells me he broke the mold in the last couple of weeks and has just gone, you know, astronomical, viral on the internet, on the YouTubes.
That's right.
So I'm going to back off here, and we're going to be doing his show, but you're getting to listen to it as the first step toward bringing Red Fisk Raw, actually rebranded to, we'll talk about that later, bringing it back. Yeah, here we go.
Yeah, that's right. I'm hosting today, and we're going to see how this works. So I wanted to say welcome to Red Fisk Raw. I'm your host, Pastor Brian Wolfmuller. Doesn't that sound nice?
Yeah.
Just take it over. No, that's right. Welcome back, Pastor Fisk, from your mission trip to Margaritaville.
Which was awesome.
How was the Cayman Islands?
They were great. They were great. Are we in video? We're going on your video?
Yeah, we're video.
Oh, jeez. Hi. It was great. It was good. It was strangely actually a mission trip and not just a vacation, although I did a little vacationing in there. It's a stunning situation that they find themselves in, a mission plant from expatriates 20 years ago that had a lot of funding. The funding isn't there. The island is not what you would think. Most of the islands in the Caribbean sort of have was that?
You died out there a little bit for me, but I got you back now.
Okay. Most of the islands in the Caribbean have a very clear culture, I think. This island is like the melting pot of the Caribbean. 41 nationalities and languages represented on the island. And so, you know, trying to plant a standard Missouri Synod WASP, if I can say it, congregation, not the easiest thing, not the most likely thing to succeed. So trying to help them think through those things while also being there. I got to visit a Cuban internment camp for refugees that are seeking asylum. They basically put in a concentration camp, not the kind that kill you, but the kind they don't let you out of. And fascinating stuff. I enjoyed it immensely.
Now, the reason why I wanted to have you as my guest on Raw today
is just to say that.
Is because you've written a new book.
I did. Hey,
yeah, that's just hold it. You've got the new book. Congratulations, by the way. I mean, this is no easy task, summoning the 14er of another book. But you published the book Echo, unbroken truth that should be broken 7 times. How does it? What's the
it's
name
just
of it?
Like that. It's just like that. It's called marketing, Brian. It's called marketing. Echo, unbroken truth worth repeating again. And the again is again and again, right? The idea is to overstate the case that we shouldn't stop saying this stuff, which we'll talk about that more when we get to the title itself, I'm sure.
Yeah. So what's the idea? So I know you've talked about it, but I want and no doubt the people who are listening to this or watching this on the YouTubes know you and know your stuff. People listening to Raw know you and know your stuff. And I think maybe that's been captured in this book in a stunning way that you've done perhaps what you do best of all, which is, I mean, a lot of things you do well, but you take those things that the words that we hear all the time, and you've said, now just let me say it, let me put it into your ear at a different angle so that you hear it differently. And as I understand it, that's what you've done with the catechism. Is that a fair picture?
That's certainly the goal. I mean, that tells me you still haven't read it, which I do hope you will at some point consider doing at least 10 pages of it.
That's right. I hope the first 10 are full of highlights.
A wise man, not to be confused with Brian Wolfmuller, once said to me that he had a particular gift, which is not to be confused with intelligence. And that particular gift is the ability to take in some information and very quickly spit it back out again in a different order, but in a way which still makes sense. And I think both you and I do have that as a tool to be used for the sake of the church in this age. I think it's why we do podcasts. It's why we're drawn to this kind of work anyway, is we like to repeat things. And for better or for worse, one of my habits in that, and this is a weakness at times as well, I think, but if you give me a task any task and you say, do this, I'm going to look at the way it's been done a million times before. I'm going to say, that's good. Let's see if we can do it better. And then I'm going to try to hit it from an angle and just take it to another level. And there's times where that needs to not be done, but there's times where it does. And particularly then as I experienced the first decade of teaching confirmation classes and found pretty much the same thing that everybody finds as a pastor, that you got 12-year-olds who are checked out before they get to you, I started to wonder, you know, what's getting lost in translation here? How are we missing this? How is this boring? Because it is. Maybe it's not boring, but maybe the issue is that we're trying to cling to things that are not the text themselves, that are not technically the Word of God, but which do convey the Word of God, and maybe we should just work on a little translation. But that runs into a problem almost immediately. I mean, you lived through this, I lived through this, I don't know if our listeners lived through this, but you know, it was within the last 20 years that the we don't need head language, we need heart language movement was trying to like get rid of doctrinal words and replace it with shenanigans, all sorts of random stuff. And that's not what I'm advocating at all. I am more advocating something along the lines with updating a translation. And I'm not even wanting to really update it permanently. I just want us to reinvigorate the words we're used to using with words we understand or words we know, words that have a ring for us. And so again, echo is the word catechism. It's the root of the word in Greek, cat echo, catechoism, right? And the word cat on the front just means again. And then we would translate catechism normally as teaching or repetition or learning or something like that, maybe even doctrine. But at the heart of this thing is the idea that it's so strong, it's so valuable that when it goes out, it comes back again, right? That's what an echo is. And for whatever reason, echo as a word in English is beautiful. It's a gorgeous word. We just love the way it sounds. Whereas catechism as a word in English is really ugly. It's harsh. It just kind of rings like pain, if you can think of it. It's almost like a torture device. I'm going to put you in my catechism, right? It's just a weird word, right? And so to see that they're the same word, but that English is so attuned to flower. If anything, I mean, I'm an English major by heart and by nature and by degree, I guess I would say. If anything, the strength of English is that it loves to do things in different ways more than once as often as possible. It globs onto other languages and pulls their words in and just keeps adding to its vocabulary. And this is a strength, right? But it also means that if we don't continue to talk and add as English adds, then we kind of get lost and possibly become archaic entirely. Another example of something that's caused me consternation. Sorry, Brian, I'll give you a chance to talk here eventually on your show.
That's right.
Another thing that's given me consternation.
You do what you want. You're the guest.
In the past is the word divine service, which is a 1900s Germans non-native English speakers attempts to translate Gottesdienst, God serving us, literally. And now we have divine service, and it sounds like, if you're just growing up with an English speaker, it sounds like, oh, it's like a really pretty service. It's so divine. It's like chocolate. It's a pretty service, divine service. We've lost something in translation. Not that the word's wrong. It's just that the word isn't English, really, right? And so before I worry about divine service permanently, I thought, hey, well, why don't I go back to the catechism and see, I didn't think this as like a plan. I was doing this in confirmation class. You know, how can I, connection was lost. Can I stop?
This is worse than the Cayman Islands.
There we go. Now we got you back. All right. As I was teaching confirmation, I started, you know, saying some of these things and then also combining them with the pictures that you'll see in the book as a way of trying to get to the visual learner as well and demonstrate the genius that God gave us in this thing we call the catechism. And then I was like, someone asked me, you ever write this down? Yeah, I start writing it down, and then I had to complete it. So about half the book was stuff that I didn't come up with while teaching confirmation. The other half was. That's maybe kind of boring.
I think this is, it reminds me of, I by the way, I'm convinced that the pictures of the in Echo, which I like, were inspired by grappling with the text. 100%. I take 100%
just as the word echo was the title of the book 2 years before Amazon.com decided to name something Echo. So now you can't find my book unless you search for my name, which is just ridiculous. I had it first, Amazon. It's copyright infringement. So also, the pictures existed long before Grappling did, but that's cool. You believe that if you want.
Yeah, I do. I found a little thing here. How this is Luther's preface to the Small Catechism, and he says, choose the form, stick with it forever. But when you preach in the presence of learned and intelligent men, exhibit your skill.
I got skill.
And present the part in varied and intricate ways and give them masterly turns as you're able. So in other words, Luther says, so you take the catechism and then you build on top of it and you say it as well as you can. I mean, you want to make it as intricate, as beautiful, as relatable as possible, that our whole lives are trying to take the catechism and to pour it into people's imaginations. Pour it into people's consciences, pour it into people's minds and ears, and do that work. And so I think that that's, I mean, it seems to me like that's precisely the task that you've undertaken.
Well, I'm glad to hear Luther. Somehow I've never read carefully that little bit about building on top of it. I've heard the bit about not changing the words quoted kind of ad nauseum, almost into death. And the question a little bit is, you know, what's he really getting at there? I think what he's getting at is he's like, look, when you say the first commandment is this, use the same words, right? Don't change that. When you say the creed in church, use the same words. And so I am in no way wanting to undo that. But you're right. What he said there, I'm trying to expound on it with all my skills, as you want to
bad skills
want to take.
All right. So what did you do? What's your magic word for divine service? Did you come up with?
I am still working on that one. Drives me crazy. I'll say when I'm teaching, what comes out now is God serving us, because it sounds like it rhymes with divine service, so no one gets too upset. And then it actually is just God serving us. You can't put that on a church sign, though, right? It's not like worship. It doesn't quite have the ring to it. But worship's not good. Worship doesn't help us at all. And that is a main idea. So I don't know. I'm lost on that one still.
All right. Now, walk us through. I mean, maybe let's take the Ten Commandments as a chunk, if you can, because you start with the Ten Commandments. But you don't call them the Ten Commandments. You call them the Ten...
important things about being creation. Yeah. Before we get to that,
I would have known that if I would have had the book around here.
There is another.
Nobody sent me a review copy. I had to buy my own.
It went to Evan.
Money.
It went to Evan instead.
Ten parts of being creative.
Yeah. There's another thing going on in not coming out right at the start and being like, "Hey, this is the catechism. Hey, you know, Lutheran, read this book about stuff you love so much. Hey, these are the Ten Commandments, the Creed, and the petitions of the Lord's Prayer." Part of the reason I'm not doing that is because I want this book to find its way into the hands of people who would never pick up something that said that. And then I want them to not know what's happening until maybe 2/3 of the way through the book. I think it's about 3/4 through the book. I finally tell you. It's like a section. Now I tell you what I have been doing because I have to. Because in order to explain what's going on, I gotta give up the ghost a little bit. But what I really want is for people to wrestle with the theology of the Ten Commandments without thinking, okay, here we go, Ten Commandments, I know this stuff. No, I want you to have no assumptions coming in so you can be sort of blindsided by how deep these things are before you figure out, oh, this is the first commandment, I get it. So for that reason, you know, some of the language is intended to help us think about it. Some of the language is intended to masquerade as just your average Protestant book that is about Lutheranism, but Protestants aren't going to pick up books about Lutheranism generally when we say, hey, it's about Lutheranism and it's better than Protestantism. Like, they're not going to read it, right?
Are you crazy?
Yeah.
Every Protestant that I know is looking for that book. Hey, Lutheran, could you tell me why I'm more wronger than I think I am?
Yeah, right.
We got to think about that a little bit. I mean, we talked about this the other day on Table Talk Radio too. Is that as the people who are listening to this, I mean, like the 5 people that listen to Table Talk Radio, and the 5 million people that watch the YouTube channel, how to get this book in the hands of unsuspecting evangelicals to to help open up their conscience and their ears to hearing law and gospel.
I agree. My hope is that the book, to some extent, is going to do it itself. The trick is it's got to get in the right set of hands initially, but I think it's the kind of book that, it's going to, I don't know, maybe no one's ever going to compare this to Broken. It's such a different book than Broken in that Broken's a young pastor writing about Lutheran theology and just clashing with culture hard. It's not the kind of book that you can necessarily just give to somebody who's not even a Christian and have them engage it. There's a little too much going on there. This thing, I think, has its own wheels. And so if it gets in enough hands of people who just love truth, Lutheran or non-Lutheran, I think it's going to move. And I don't know, you know, I don't want to toot my own horn on that at all, but it certainly is my hope. If we can find a way to machinate that, to really push that out, great. We are very parochial as Lutherans, though. We don't run in other people's circles very well, and we're not real good at putting our stuff in front of them. So I don't know. I mean, you're speaking to my heart a little bit here, but...
Well, here's a suggestion. I mean, just for the people who are listening, when you buy the book, so you should buy the book for your family to have in your own library. But buy... So did you hear what Pastor Fisk said? Is that the book is for the lovers of truth. So buy a copy for your family. Buy a copy for the person you know who loves truth, who is a Christian but not a Lutheran. And buy a copy for the person that you know who is not a Christian. And say, hey, I want you to read this book, and I want to take you out for coffee and talk to you about it. So buy three copies and give them away. Now, if you think, well, I don't have any people that I know that are not Lutheran or not Christian, then God bless you. I don't know what kind of – you must be living in the Midwest.
You know what? This would be the craziest thing, though. Like, walk up to your barista with a copy and be like – you know, whoever you see the most when you buy your coffee, pick them out, walk them up, and say, hey, you know what? I want you to have this.
Or the Protestant pastor whose church is closest to your church.
Oh, that would be interesting. Oh, I like that idea. I like that idea.
So buy three copies. Make sure when you buy it, buy three copies. It's only like $3, right?
No.
So buy three copies and to go give them away to people and offer to have the conversation. And then I'm interested in how that conversation goes with them. I know that Pastor Fisk wants to hear how those conversations
go. I would like to hear about that.
One of the things that's amazing is that, you know, we do this stuff like the YouTubes and the writing of books and things. And then someone says, hey, I read your book, and you can hardly, I mean, it's hard to believe actually that someone, you know, took the time to read. So we want to hear,
That is hard to believe with your book. I agree. It's pretty tough to swallow.
Okay. We had the 10 things about being creation.
Right. Go ahead.
Let me
say something about 10 things about being creation just so it makes sense here. So like the law, as we understand it as Lutherans, which is summed up in the 10 commandments, is nothing other than the will of God as he designed the world to be. The law is not a set of rules. It's not an arbitrary this, that, or the other thing. It is a description of the way mankind particularly is made to work. And in this sense, it's very similar to the things like gravity, right? When we talk about natural laws, they're not entirely removed. They're also God's laws. They're just his laws of nature. We're talking about his laws of mankind, or laws of morality, I suppose you could say. And so to be a man or a son of man or a child of man, to be man or woman, is to have the Ten Commandments describe what you're supposed to be. Not in like a you better be it, but like, man, that would have been great if we were this. We were this, and then something happened. And so the ten Commandments are the 10 important things about being, I wanted to say being human, but it's bigger than that, about being creation is the whole thing. And the book tries to come at it from that point of view, and the pictures all kind of pile up together to show you that the Ten Commandments actually give you a diagram of what human life is. There is nothing in human life that you cannot fit into one of those 10 commandments, one of the spheres that they describe. And I think ultimately the best thing in Echo is not going to be the 10 important things way of saying it, but it's that picture, the drawing. I don't know if I've got a place easily found where just that part comes together. Let me see. Yeah, right here. You might not be able to see this. Let's see if we can fit it in here, like right there.
Yeah, that's good. It's going to be especially good for the people listening to my edition of Raw here.
Yes, right. For the video people. Yeah, they're all going to go watch you now. Well, anyway. So, It's all about losing or gaining ground on Brian's fame. That's what everything's about.
Finally, you're getting the picture. Now, the second thing, then, you move into the creed secretly.
Mm.
You skip the, in some ways, the creation part is absorbed by the Ten Commandments, which I think is beautiful. I mean,
it is.
So the first article and the Ten Commandments are bound up together. So second article, third article. But so the second article you call, I can't remember. You call something else.
It's the three elements of the gospel. Yeah, that's right. The three elements of the gospel. So about the first article being absorbed, I mean, the thing was, like, by the time you get done with the Ten Commandments, you've done the first commandment, and the first commandment more or less is the first article of the creed. Yeah, give or take. And then the only part that is not, which is that maker of heaven and earth, well, that's what the other commandments tell you, is how heaven and earth are, right? And so you've kind of done it all. And so as not to reveal my hand that, hey, I'm taking you through the Ten Commandments and the Creed right now, I don't ever tell you we're going to skip the first article. But we do. It is built into that. But then the other, like, major thing in the book, oh my goodness, this is, like, to me, I think, the most important thing in the entire book. And I'll show you a picture here again and maybe try to describe it. You got a 10 and a 7 on opposite sides of a little box that holds a 3 in the middle of it. And the 10 relates or is close or in the same section as a 1 that's on top of the 3. Or maybe it's not a 3, it's a 5. It's a 3. Yeah, the three elements. And then there's the 7 on the side connects down to what's underneath the 5.
I get it.
Yeah, you see what's going on. And so what it is,
let me guess.
Okay, go ahead. What is it?
Okay, so the 1 is God. The 3 is going to be God for us, the creed. The 5 is going to be the work of the Holy Spirit from the third article of the creed.
Yeah.
The Christian Church, communion of saints, forgiveness of sins, resurrection of the body, life everlasting, which relates to the 7, which is the 7 petitions of the Lord's Prayer, which is paralleled to the creative side, which is the Ten Commandments.
Yeah. So that ultimately what's going on here, I mean, the only thing that's different is that the 3 is not the three articles. It's three different main teachings within the second article, who Jesus is, what Jesus did, what Jesus is coming again to do. And then the one on top is your article on the Creator. But what you see here is that let's go back to the you remember these tests in the SAT tests, you know, a dog is to canine as cat is to X, and you'd have to, like, figure out, right?
Yes.
Okay, so what this chart is showing you is that 10 commandments is to first article as 7 petitions is to third article, right? That they are actually the same reality. You're looking at the created order through the view of the Creator who you are separated from, or the view of the Spirit who has joined with you in the redemption. And at the heart of that redemption, you know, is the work that was done to bridge it, which is that middle, which is the cross of Jesus. And this image is going to get more expounded. That's like a summarizing of what all of the little pictures are adding up to it. The big image at the very back has all the pieces to it. But that idea that really the catechism is only the creed. It is God the Father, who created the earth, Jesus, who saved the earth, Holy Spirit, who redeems you now by word and sacrament, and the Lord's Prayer is inside that third article. The Lord's Prayer is a way of expounding on what's already there in the third article, and the Ten Commandments are a way of expounding on what's already there in the first article. And I think that idea, to me, was the most, like, revolutionary one. Like when I got that, I was just like, whoa, it's like all one thing. And then, amazingly,
I was able to decode it, by the way, because I've studied ancient Jewish Kabbalah and mysticism, you know, and that's exactly what they all the old numerologists look like, just like that.
Yeah, it is pretty weird looking. I'll give you that. The other three chief parts of the Small Catechism are not outside of this picture either. They're just incorporated into those five things that the Spirit does in the third article directly. Three of those five things are baptism, supper, and absolution. And the book does talk about that too, but not as loudly, because, again, I was trying not to bang Lutheran drums too hard in this thing. You know, in short, the communion of saints is not only an explanation of the Holy Christian Church, which it is that, but it really is what the Holy Christian Church is. When we come and commune together, on Lord's Supper, we are the Holy Christian Church. That's like the definition of us. The forgiveness of sins is what the absolution is, like verbatim, I forgive you. And then the resurrection of the body is indeed what baptism is, believe it or not. We don't, do we? Ha, that's why you didn't catch it right away. But it's true. It's what Scripture says. So all those other chief parts, Luther adds them to the three-part catechism because he thinks, well, we got to explain this because nobody knows it. But they're already there in the three-part catechism. They're there in the creed. He's just trying to make sure we understand them. Yeah. So.
No, that's fantastic. I mean, so the catechism is a fractal. I mean, this is the way to think of it. You know, you have all the seven petitions are all to pray, and the whole of the first table in the first three commandments, the last three petitions of the Lord's Prayer, and all of this is embedded in the fourth petition of the Lord's Prayer. Embedded there in the third article of the Creed. And so it's wrapped in on itself and it has references all over like a very complex and beautiful snowflake.
Yeah, yeah. I lost you a little bit there. So my listeners on RAW are going to miss some of that, but you're exactly right. So it all is just wrapped up within itself. And so you can boil it down to like one thing, right? Father, Son, and Spirit. And then it can just keep like origami just expanding and expanding and opening and opening and opening and opening, going broader and broader and broader almost endlessly, which is why. So like the opening quote from Luther that is at the front of the book before the book even starts.
I read that part.
You read that part. I got it.
Did you know that?
Yeah, your internet's bad right now, man. You're like dancing as a blurry fog. Can you even see me?
Fine on my side.
Okay. All right. God himself is not ashamed to teach these things daily. He knows nothing better to teach. We finish learning in 1 hour what God himself cannot finish teaching, right? We it's so deep. It's just going to keep expanding beyond our minds. Once you think you know it, you got more to learn still.
What does Luther say after that? He says we have to teach the devil to death, right?
Right.
So we keep teaching these things until the devil is taught to death, till the devil is no more, and that happens at the end. I was thinking about this. You were telling me your name for the resurrection, which was my favorite band, my favorite punk rock band.
Yeah, the Aeonic Replenishing. Yes.
Talk about that, I suppose.
Man, I'm going to talk about my favorite punk rock band names. I have a couple, but I think it would be Goliath Lost would be the my punk rock band. Aeonic Replenishing. Well, okay. To get there, though, you really got to build on the other pieces of the third article, right?
So, oh, yeah, okay, so you talked about the three things of the gospel, and what are those three things?
Oh, wait, well, now you're going back to the second article. So the three elements of the gospel, this is really the three elements of the second article of the Creed. I am convinced that part of the reason our mission, our evangelism as modern Lutherans struggles a little bit is that we have... it's not wrong to say it this way, but we have included the results of the gospel with the gospel, and then we've done it so much that when we go to talk to people about the gospel, we actually talk about the results and not about the gospel. And it's the Creed that's telling me this, right? And as well as the preaching in Acts. So the second article of the Creed is just about who Jesus is, what Jesus has done, and what Jesus is coming again to do. Nothing more, nothing less. And I think that's in the most narrow sense, there's a broad and narrow sense of gospel. In the most narrow sense, that's the gospel. And that is the power of God for salvation to all who believe it. That Jesus was born of the Virgin, begotten of God, that he suffered, that he died, that he rose again, that he ascended into heaven, that he is returning, and that he's going to judge the world according to what he's already done. We don't say that nearly as much as we say things like Jesus loves you, right? Which isn't in any sense in the second article, it kind of flows out of the third article. So in the third article, you have these five results of the gospel, which are the work of the Holy Spirit in the world by means of the words about Jesus. So it's the words about Jesus that do these other things, right? Which are the assembling of believers, the Holy Christian Church, the communion of saints, which is the common union of I don't know, what do I call that? I forgot what I call that one. It's the common union of something. Come on, book. I'm in the prayer. Oh, come on, book. the fellow shape of believers. That's it. Oh, I love it. So that's your communion of saints. Another result of what Jesus has done is what we call the forgiveness of sins, divorcing us from our evil. A fourth result is the immortalization of our bodies, right? The resurrection of the body, the immortalization of us. And then the final result is this aeon of replenishing or aeonic replenishing that all creation gets to come with us into paradise. So it's going to be restored. And those five things, they're good news. They are gospel broadly speaking, but I don't think they're what convert people ultimately. I think that the conversion moment when a person is awakened by the Holy Spirit ultimately comes from hearing about the death, resurrection, ascension, and return of Jesus, particularly the death and resurrection of Jesus. And maybe I'm wrong about that, and I'm willing to receive correction on that. But I tell you, in the book of Acts, when they preach, they don't get to forgiveness of sins very fast, if ever. In fact, if I recall, Peter doesn't get to forgiveness of sins on Pentecost until after people ask him what it means, right? All he preaches is that Jesus is risen. Deal with it. Deal with it, guys. It's a fact, right? And that this is what converts people into hearers at that point. And then he says, baptism, forgiveness, all that stuff. So the three elements of the gospel is a way of summarizing everything that the creed says about Jesus. You can boil it all down to who he is. There's two things. What he did, five things, more or less. And then what he's coming again to do, or what he's going to do, two things. One of those is come again. So who is he? We all know this, right? Born of a virgin, he's man. Begotten of God, the Father, he's God. That's who he is. What did he do? He was born, he suffered, he died, he rose, he ascended. What's he going to do? He's going to come again, and he's going to judge. Those are the three elements of the gospel in summary. And funny ways to understand that is Christianity, that set of things, that set of historical facts, I think is part of rediscovering how we Lutherans can start to speak to non-Christians and maybe convert them. We're pretty decently okay at speaking to Christians who already believe Jesus has risen from the dead and then have been buried under the false doctrine of works righteousness. We're kind of okay at telling them about the forgiveness of sins, and I emphasize the kind of okay on that part, but we're really bad at converting people to Christianity, and I think it's because we don't talk about Jesus. We talk about the results of Jesus, and yeah. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Are you still here? Your video went away.
Yeah, I'm listening. We play this game called Which Article Is It From? And for the confirmands. And so I'll say something, and they got to say first article, second article, or third article, right? And it's an amazing fact that the list of things that you can say for the second article is just tiny.
Yeah.
So you can say just about anything, like radishes, first article, you know, camel rides. First article. I mean, you know, all this sort of stuff. Church, third article. The Bible, third article. Faith in Christ, the forgiveness of sins, third article.
Right, right.
So a clean conscience, the resurrection of the body, that's third article stuff. So to what do you say for second article? The man Jesus, who was born, who lived, who died, who rose, who ascended into heaven, that's blam. It's very, very narrow, very historic.
Mm. It's stuck, though, in that history. It's only the stuff he did. So, right, you could say, like, Jesus healing people, second article, right? Jesus talking to Nicodemus and saying you're a moron, right? Second article. I'm going to disagree with you about radishes and camel rides, though, man. Those are third article, too. That's the Ionic replenishing, man. There's going to be camels and radishes. They're going to be sweet.
The radishes are going to be sweet?
I don't know. The camels, maybe. I don't know.
Even more radishy?
They'll be awesome. They'll be
the
great.
Radishes will be. Have I told you this when I was reading Luther? Oh, you'll love this. How smart, how wise Adam was before the fall.
You have shared this. It's good though. Go do it. Do it.
He'd look at every animal and he would understand it perfectly and say, "You are a parrot," or because he knew everything about the animal and knew what their name should be. And he knew that he understood the dolphinness of a dolphin and the camelness of a camel and the radishness of a radish. And then Luther says, after the fall, all Adam could do is look at the stuff and say, can I eat it?
That's the best part. So true, serving
that's
the belly.
That's all we are is devourers now.
What's interesting to me about that that idea a little bit is the concept of primordial language that comes out of that, right? That Adam wouldn't have had to be taught how to speak. He was made to some extent knowing the language of God himself, and that his words like God's words, more so than ours, were what they said. I don't think they had creative power to make what they said, but when he said parrot, it wasn't just a garbly gook of sounds, like it was the essence of the bird itself, and it meant that, right? And we kind of get that. If you study language translations, you can see that in some languages. English doesn't have any of that. Our words are just sounds, which is probably why we like different words so much. So we just like, all we got is the sound. Hebrew is very much closer, though. It certainly tries to have the word be what it is. Anyway, I think that's a really fascinating story. I don't know. It makes me wonder, though, what is it about when Solomon says, you know, the glory of God to hide a thing, the glory of kings to search a thing out? I think there's something to, at least in paradise, but also then I would read that back into Adam, something to man not knowing everything intuitively, but having the joy of learning still. Maybe I'm wrong. I'll let Luther be the doctor on this one, but there's something glorious about learning.
I'm not sure they would totally exclude each other. Because see, Adam was the student of the thing. He could study the coconuts like you were doing, you know.
Dude, coconuts are crazy.
Studying the coconut.
Do you know, like, I always thought a coconut was like this little brown circle. Do you know that's not actually the coconut? The coconut is this big green, fruity thing, and that little brown circle's in the middle, and to get to it, you need a machete. And you have to, like, hack at it with the machete, because you can try sawing it with, a bread knife, and it really doesn't work very well. The way I finally got through it was a long screwdriver and a hammer, and it just popped holes in the thing. But when you buy coconuts, it's that little brown thing, that's only, like, the nut. You're missing the rest of it. It's cool. It's very cool. Anyway, stupid.
Coconuts, third article gifts, according to Pastor Fitz.
That's right.
Book.
That's right.
Hey, the most important question I have to ask is that, did you buy that necklace in the Cayman Islands?
I did. My wife and I went shopping one day, and we got her it was coconut. Earrings made out of coconut shell somehow. Really cool looking. Bought her a couple of those, and almost bought her a dress, but we decided against it. And then she... saw this and said, "Oh, that looked good on you. You used to have one like that." Because unbeknownst to most people, I used to be a surfer kid on the San Diego coast, and I had a necklace like this, only all white, for about 5 years. Wore it constantly, and then eventually I got tired of it and threw it away, which was stupid because then I missed it. So anyway, it's sort of a throwback thing for my life.
Imagine yourself back then, the surfer kid, if you knew what kind of facial hair you were going to be able to grow when you grew up.
Did I even trim it today for you? I even trimmed it today because of your mockery yesterday on Table Talk. It's awful. It's awful.
Hey, hold up the cover.
I'd grow
more
if I could. What's that?
Hold up the cover of the book so we can see it and get a good screen capture.
Dude, I'm very proud of this cover because I had to fight for it a little bit. I appreciate CPH in a lot of ways. They do a lot of really good work. And they've been friendly to me in regards to, I come to them, this kind of sideways idea guy, and say, "Hey, I want to do this." And they kind of look at me for a second, they're like, we'll try. And then they do it, and they pull it off pretty well. So I had emailed Scott Kinneman, you know, 2 years ago, and said, "Okay, I know what I want the cover to be. I want it to be basically plain type print, like from a typewriter, black and white with a blood stain smeared across it." And he just wrote back. He said, "You know, we know this from history. Black and white covers do not sell." And I wrote back, "But it'll have a blood stain smeared across it." And he said, "Well, we'll see what we can do." And then the story came back to me from within CPH, though. So they had like 3 to 5 different covers that they'd worked up as options. And they're like in a room, and they're like kind of debating which one they should use. And they'd worked mine up, even though everyone had kind of decided it wasn't going to be the one they used. And they kept like picking it up and coming back to it, and it stayed in the gambit and got down. So finally, it was one of the last two, and they're like, "You know what? This is great." And they kept it. So I love this cover, and I feel really affirmed too, because I was just at a district conference, and the CPH bookstore was all set up, and you could see all of the books kind of spread out, and it's like this wall of color, and from 15 feet away, you see this one white book with a blood stain just screaming out of its great. It's marketing at its best. It's wonderful. Anyhow, there's the cover. That's not what you wanted me to talk about, Brian, is it?
Yeah. No. So what have we missed? I want you to. I want to make sure we pick up the scraps.
So we got the 5 results of the gospel that we kind of went over at a bird's eye view. I think those are super important and maybe one of the most contributing pieces that the book has. Ten Commandments, I think most people get that theology pretty well by the time they're an adult in the Lutheran church, at least. But we don't necessarily get into the third article as much as we should, at least as third article, and particularly the emphasis on the resurrection of the body as opposed to heaven, all that kind of stuff. But then also the Lord's Prayer is phenomenal stuff, and it kind of is trapped in our way of viewing it as nothing but a prayer, as opposed to viewing it as the ultimate expression of sanctification in the Christian life through faith alone. You know, I don't know where you want to go on this, Brian, but you know, there's all these little fighting debates about the law these days in Lutheran circles, and you wonder why no one wants to join Lutheran churches. We can't even agree with ourselves about our own theology. It's ridiculous. And I don't know why we are hung up on either having the law or getting rid of the law, when it really, neither of those options, the way they're being expressed, is quite true. But it all gets thrown under this word sanctification. And what is the locus? What is the place of sanctification? Where do we learn what it means to be a sanctified Christian? And what you hear from most people in the argument, maybe even on both sides, oddly, is that it's a matter of what you do. It's a matter of the law. It's a matter of you fulfilling the right number of things. And yet that's not where, at least our catechism, would point us to understand holiness. Holiness and righteousness are different things. And holiness comes from being unified with the Holy One, with the Holy Spirit. And the first thing he does is he teaches you to cry out, Abba, Father, right? He doesn't teach you to do something. He reorients you. Now you are God's child. You can't make this happen, right? It just is. You're holy now. So now, just like that, you have the holiness of God as you, the holification of the Christian. There's only one holification or sanctification of you, and it is that God is your Father. But this reality that is true, right, which is now believed and believed alone because of the words promised to you, this reality then expresses itself in other beliefs. And these other beliefs are going to be the connected to the way you orient yourself to the Ten Commandments, but not so much about necessarily you doing them as what you believe about them now. So you see them differently. So where the Second Commandment would teach you not to use God's name in vain, the holiness of the Christian cries out, make your name holy, Lord. Right? Which isn't like, I'm going to make your name holy, Lord, because I can't do that. It's holy by itself. But I need you to do this, right? And I hunger for this. It's a true faith. It's a living and active reality. I'm a new man, a new person to believe this. And all of the petitions of the Lord's Prayer end up doing this for us. They end up fulfilling the Ten Commandments without our lifting a finger. It's crazy. It's by faith alone. Oh, whoa. We just lost Brian there for a minute, but now we're back, and I guess if you watch the video, you get a different story now, right? This is kind of cool. So what were you saying to the video viewers?
That the there's a relationship between the Ten Commandments and the Lord's Prayer, and when it comes to to the stuff of God and the stuff of man, and when it's in the Ten Commandments, you have three stuffs of God and seven stuffs of man, the first table and the second table, but when it comes to the Lord's Prayer, you have six stuffs of God and one stuff of man. So, So the whole last part of the Ten Commandments, which is namely everything that has to do with our life, gets reduced down to the fourth petition. And then the fourth petition is expanded in our daily. So as we're standing before God, it's just daily. As we're other stuff, parents and marriage and everything else like this. So there's this great relationship between the two. But anyway.
Well, okay, I want to say something, though, about that, because I agree with you, although I think the way that I've kind of discovered this here in my own head, there's a little bit of a difference. I want to make sure that I say this right. So I think that from give us this day our daily bread, we move into stuff of man for a little longer than just that petition. So the picture, which again, way at the back here, you can see this is not the Ten Commandments picture. This is the Lord's Prayer picture. It's similar to the Ten Commandments picture. That one's way over here, you know, before the fall, if I can get it on the picture there. And yet there, you end up in a couple of boxes. So all your life's in these boxes. And in these boxes, things are happening to you. But you notice how 4 and 5 are down there on the bottom of this one big box, and then 6 is like up in the corner of it? Okay, that's the 4th, 5th, and 6th petition. So you're in this box of daily bread, which is, again, 4th petition is summarizing the whole kind of Ten Commandment designed world, as it were. But now, as a Christian, you're looking at it differently. So you're not just looking at it and saying, can I eat it, as you were saying earlier, Brian, but you all have this 5th petition in which you realize that there's disorder here. And your response to the disorder is not help me, it's forgive us, right? That all of us in this box now have the same problem and all of us need the same answer. And you know what it is? It's divorcing from evil. So it's forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. So you're also then oriented to want to live focused toward the other now instead of toward yourself. And then the next petition flows right out of this. Now that you know that, now you know that what we all need is forgiveness, and you know that you need to go.
this is a marvelous gift. One of the gifts of putting something down in writing like this is that it puts things together as a, you know, as a completeness. One of the problems with podcasts, one of the problems with the YouTube videos, I mean, we can hit on stuff here and there and talk about stuff here and there, but the advantage of the book is that it puts it all together and it connects all the dots, and that's really where wisdom starts to come from, is being able to weave all of these things together. And just the excerpts that we've talked about yesterday on Table Talk and today here, I mean, really, I think you've got me convinced.
I hope so. You'll like it. I really think you will. And your bit about books there is really good in that I got this from a pagan, but he's right. A book is a conversation that you can pause whenever you want to think about what somebody just said, and then you can pick it up again. And you can go back and you can replay the conversation exactly as it was later, if you like. They are powerful tools. It's also the only way to say something beyond your present life. And that's the only reason you're going to write, if you're going to write something as a book. It's not just arrogance. There's a little arrogance with it, though, is that you want to have words that extend further down the tree than your own mouth. And I think this book is going to do that, not because I wrote it, but because of this permanent truth that's in it. It's enduring things. It's worth repeating again and again and again. Let me say one more thing, though. It was where I got cut off before. So in our box, right, 4th petition, world box we live in, right, we're in this big box, 5th petition, we know we need to forgive each other and we need God's forgiveness in this big box. That then leads me to see that everything I do that needs to be forgiven is actually causing problems in the box. And so now in the same box, I start aiming toward God and saying, well, since you're in charge of all of this, can I like need to ask for forgiveness a little bit less? Not because I need to be righteous for me, but like because it's ruining everything else. Can you lead me not into temptation? So I stop breaking everything. And so then you're brought back into this aiming toward the Father again through the Son, you know, through the first petition, hallowed be thy name, the holiness that allows me to even talk to you in the first place. But that's all still part of this same box. So this is all me responding to, you know, things of man. I would say that to some extent, the 4th, 5th, and 6th petition are things of man, dealing with how creation has been redeemed now, before the Aeonic replenishing. Because then you hit the 7. Notice how 7's going to the end of time, right? We also have a deliver us from evil, the end of the world, when Jesus comes back. It's all connected to the creed, right? And everything gets Aeonically replenished. What we've had by faith down here on the ship of the church has become sight in the life of the world to come.
And so we can stop wrestling with the computers.
Yeah.
Is that good to you?
I didn't even hear what you said because you cut out.
I said we got to put a bow on it so we can stop wrestling.
Yeah, you're right. And I got to head out anyway.
Everybody for listening to my show called Raw. If you're a Patreon subscriber, you've donated like your kidney to me because I did a new podcast, and I want to tell you how much I appreciate that.
You're kind of right there. You're kind of right. It sounds like Brian needs some support to get his sound stuff working over there. I don't know what's going on with your cyber blasting that was about. You didn't get any of that from your end?
No, it was just great. I mean, it's fantastic over here.
Because when I unplugged my computer from my sound system, like it was all coming into my computer somehow. Thanks, Brian, for your time and for this conversation.
Yeah, thanks for everybody subscribing too. I mean, really, take advantage of this book. Use it as a tool for your family, for your faith, for your neighbor. Bless your neighbor with it.
What a mess. It's not Brian's fault. That's not what I'm saying. That was great in a lot of ways. This is a day later. I'm trying to do the cleanup on this. And what a mess. Getting the tech together without buying into the insanity that is Adobe's subscription program for Adobe Audition is just easier said than done. There's a lot of good tools out there for audio editing, but learning them and finding the ones that will actually let me do, I'm using like three different ones right now. And now I'm re-recording this part anyway because the one that actually lets me mix channels wouldn't record from my external microphone. What? I don't know. Anyhow. You see there a little bit of the issue. The big impediment to Raw coming back is not the content at this point. The big impediment is just getting the tech to where it's listenable and finding the time to do that. So I've been spending this morning, 2 hours now, trying to just get the tech going, and it continues to be an obstacle for me. But Raw's not dead. Raw's not dead. It's going to be rebranded, not going to lose the Raw, going to add something to the Raw. We're going to come back. Revelation's not going to go away, but it's not going to be the only thing. It's just a matter of getting these pieces in order without bending the knee to paying monthly fees that are just ridiculous for a little editing software. There is a way to do it. We're going to get there. We're going to do more video with Brian. By the way, it turns out apparently only the first 15 minutes of that video recorded. That's all being done through an in-browser app that he found called Loop, I think it is. It might be Loon. It would figure if it was Loon. But I think it's Loop. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty swift. But then that might have been what all of that sound issues were. We cut some of that out so you didn't hear that, but you heard how his voice got weaker throughout the episode. The connections just weren't there. So anyhow, bear with us as we figure this out. As I figured this out, Raw's not dead yet. We'll see you soon.